Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and blessings, blessings and greetings, blessings to Don Rishi Goodman, and we're live because we want to stay alive. And Torah Chaim, in the instructions of life, Torah Chesed, the instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, the instructions of mercy. Welcome to Soul Class 31, which is kind of interesting. You know, there is a concept in Torah, and Mukha Mukha B'Torah. There is not ultimately a proper order in Torah, because sometimes we see events depicted in Torah when a character in Torah, a story, an important person in the Torah is described as passing on, when actually in the Parsha following that description from the previous week, yesterday's portion, we learned about the passing on of Yitzhak, Isaac, the patriarch of Israel. But in this week's Torah portion, he, in the proper chronological sense, he's still alive at the time of the story of Joseph, the righteous one, where he was sold into slavery by his brothers. In fact, Isaac was still alive. Yitzhak was still alive. But in last week's Torah portion, he passed on. Why am I saying this? Last night, I did actually Soul Class number 32, Soul being an acronym for S7O, oldest or original, U, universal, L, or laws, because it was brought to my attention by blessed daughter of Noah, Catherine Sarmen, out in British Columbia, Canada, that she wanted to learn, and she thought it would be important for others to learn. Other people have chimed in on this issue. What's the difference between using the name of the Most High in vain, which is called profanation of the divine name or names, because there are many names to the Most High which are considered to be divine, and also the idea of blasphemy, may we be spared of such, you know, harsh action. With that being said, that was Soul Class number 32, which I scheduled after I scheduled this one, number 31. Hopefully tonight we will continue at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on this blessed Blog Talk Radio station network, cyberspace, where we're trying to work with permeating soul time and place with the soulful teachings of the Tonanitsky, the Eternal Torah. With that being said, blessings to those. We have 57 minutes left in today's program, so I want to turn to a teaching. Hopefully, I have a couple of guests coming in, and also I see some people have logged into the chat room, which I'm going to try to do. It's a little bit hard when I'm moderating because I don't have someone to help me. Greetings and blessings to guest number 561, and also to guest number 606, whoever you may be. With that being said, let's go to a teaching, blessed souls, because today's show is about the idea of charity, or tzedakah. Charity in English is also known as tzedakah, but the word charity really doesn't do full justice in the English vernacular to the Hebrew word of tzedakah. True, we've all heard, and, well, 1 second, let's look for the two callers are calling in. Let's just see who they are. Oh! Sounds or looks like the phone number of Blazing a Trail out in British Columbia, Canada, Catherine Saramana. Catherine, hold on for 1 second. I'm just going to put in Ron Williams. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hold on. We have Catherine Saramana on the line, and we also have you, and now we're going to pull in Dennis Ryan.
Dennis. Hello, Don. Hello, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have... Let me just introduce everyone because I can see who's on the line here. We have Catherine Saramana from Western Canada. We have Ron Williams out by JFK. And also part of the Big Apple, I think in Long Island or Queens, we have Dennis Ryan. We're going to start the show, ladies and gentlemen, or gentlemen and ladies. I just want to just give a place before your blessed ears, souls, and minds the context of today's show. That the old saying, charity begins at home, has been a mainstay in many homes for many generations, crossing over the boundaries of many cultures, nations, and faiths. So please join us today as we explore charity, which is tzedakah in Hebrew from the Torah. May all that be blessed and anointed to participate with their minds, souls, and hearts. So since Catherine, you know, I was ready to be a general. We'll start with the ladies first. Captain Sarah, do you remember hearing when you were growing up or in your community, charity starts at home, and how do you try to integrate that into your lifestyle and educate your children to act in this manner?
That's a good question. Yes, I do remember listening to that while growing up. And I grew up in a family that was very giving, and I try to teach the children that by example. For example, a few days ago, I put my name in to volunteer at the hospital because they need people to do the switchers for the televisions, and you greet the people, friendly smile, and make their day or something like that, and that shows the children.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I just want to, before you chime in, Ron, we have on the line Mordechai Ben Sarah. Mordechai, good morning from California.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Okay, just to let you know, we have Catherine Manor, who's probably 700 miles north of you. We have Dennis Ron over on the East Coast, and we also have Ron Williams, of course, yourself, myself, your friendly neighbor, cyberspace Torah activist. So, Mordechai, we're going to let Ron chime in and hope you'll give us a vibe as well. Ron, do you remember hearing the saying in your own home, charity starts at home?
I heard that, but I also heard another statement which really enforced that for me was always place yourself in somebody else's shoes. Mm-hmm. And that for me enforced the feeling of not only giving charity, you know, handing out, you know, money or food or assistance to those in need, but also feeling, trying to feel how they feel and respond in that fashion to them. Because you basically you start to share the feelings that they're feeling the best way possible, which is talking to them on the level of being a friend and responding to them in that fashion. So that informed my whole concept of charity, actually.
Beautiful. Dennis, do you remember growing up here in charity starts at home?
Well, it has to begin someplace. And if you can't take care of people who you know, how can you even address the people you don't know?
True. Mordechai, would you like to give you 2 cents or 3 cents? And by the way, you're chiming in would be an act of tzedakah, would be the right thing to do to give you valuable input.
tzedakah, yeah. If you do tzedakah at home, you know, you make sure that your family is okay, and you know that's the first place. That's my rabbi asked him one time about, you know, whom should I give charity first? And he said, first is your family. And he did not go with any further explanation about it, but it is obvious because, you know, whose welfare is the most important to you? It is your family. And that if your family has everything it needs, even if it's your wife, you can even give charity to your wife in certain areas. You can even give charity to your children, you know. So if at home everything is okay, then you move to the next level, you know, where you can give charity to others, you know, to other nations even, to other other friends, to your rabbi. So that's what I can chime in right now.
Okay. So, you know, originally we were going to start the show, and, you know, there are many original points to the show because, you know, as much as we can prepare, it's also, I think, important for us to have a little sense of spontaneity. I was originally planning, and we will go into it hopefully in a few minutes with Dennis Ryan, a teaching from Rambam, because, you know, Dennis is our consultant and advocate for the teachings of Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Maimonides, Moses Ben Maimon, with his seminal work, Guide to the Perplexed. But I would like to share with all of you and any of those listening in a Talmudic teaching from the Tractate of Sukkah, which is the following. Not only does it stress the idea of giving tzedakah, but there's a level, so to speak, incorporated with tzedakah, giving charity, of doing acts of righteousness, which is called Gemilas Chasadim, acts of kindness. So we're going to kind of like mix those two concepts together today. But first we're going to talk about this concept, and I'd like everyone to chime in on it. Then we're going to go into this teaching with Dennis Ryan from Mor Nevuchim, the Guide of the Perplexed. So it says the following, my friends who are co-hosting with me today. It says the following. Rabbi Lazar says, giving tzedakah is greater than offering all the sacrifices. Giving charity is greater than offering all the, you know, there's the animal sacrifice, and there's the meal offerings, there's the wine libations, there's the water libations. For it says, doing what is right and just is preferable to God than an offering. And that's written in Proverbs 21, verse 3. Then Rabbi Lazar also says, acts of kindness are greater than charity. For it says, in Hosea, the prophet Navi Hosea, sow charity for yourselves, and you will reap according to kindness. The verse speaks of sowing charity and reaping kindness, which means if a person sows, it is doubtful whether he'll eat the harvest or not. When a person reaps, he will certainly eat it. Rabbi Lazar further said, charity is rewarded according to the kindness with which it is given. So it says, quote, sow charity for yourselves, and you will reap according to the kindness with which you give your charity. So also there's a brisa, which is an Aramaic term, which is referring to the teaching that was outside of the yeshiva, which is known as the Beit Medrash, Rabbi Judah, the friends of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who compiled what are some of the teachings called Mishnah, which was primary means of recording in very terse, succinct fashion, the oral Torah traditions. In three aspects, acts of kindness are greater than charity. Why? Because charity you can only do with your possessions, but acts of kindness you can do both with your person, and you can eulogize, you can escort the dead to their final resting place, you can make the bride and groom happy, and with your possessions by lending money from her clothes. Charity you can only give to the needy. Acts of kindness you can perform both to the rich and the poor. Charity you can only give to the living. Acts of kindness you can perform both to the living and the dead by attending their funeral and burial. So I'd like to go back to the beginning of this teaching about the whole idea of giving charity is greater than offering all the sacrifices. That's an important point because we don't offer animal or even meal offerings or wine libations or water offerings. Anyone like to comment on that, how they understand that charity now is greater than the sacrifices in our day and age? Anyone like to comment on that?
Wow, that is definitely perplexed. That's amazing.
What do you find perplexing here?
What I was thinking is, you know, when you're saying the act of kindness, it affects both the rich and the poor. And every 2 weeks on Tuesday, there's the recycle truck that comes. And I'm very conscious of that. Oh, I got to do that first thing in the morning. That's what I do, is separate all the cups from the plastic, from the cardboard. And I look around to see, you know, what day, sometimes I forget what day it is or what week it was. So I'll see to see if my neighbor is doing it. So, and then she waves at me, and it's like that. I feel that act of kindness. It's like we influence each other, and then the rest of the neighborhood, they're going to hopefully do the recycling, which is an act of kindness because it's part of the pairing and healing of the world, and it is also a charity too. No?
That's right, yeah, because we have to do a charity to the earth because we are the stewards of the earth. We don't, even though a person may own their property through land title and acquisition, we're still, you know, my grandmother may, she rest in peace, she once told a friend of hers who told me a couple of years after my grandmother passed on, she said, my grandmother used to say, we're only renting here down on earth. So whether a person is a landowner or not, you know, we are renting down here. Gentlemen, Ron or Dennis or Mordechai, would any one of you like to chime in on this whole idea? How right now we see that the gift of charity is greater than offering all the sacrifices.
Well, you can give something physical, and it can be accepted as a physical thing. But when you give something mental, it's considered caring, and that sometimes has a greater effect than the physical object itself.
Right. Ron or Mordecai, would you like to chime in?
As I was listening to Catherine, I just stumbled across a portion here in the Talmud called Baba Batra, 9a. It says, greater than the one who does a mitzvah is the one who causes others to do a mitzvah. And we see that our actions sometimes, as insignificant as it may seem to us, if we make sure that it's a positive action and one of caring and kindness, we see that it can actually affect others without actually going over and telling them that they should do this. But they follow by example. So she was talking about how she, you know, her neighbor and everything, you know, you continue in this fashion. And once I had an issue with a person where I told them that sometimes it's good to mention things that you do for the community or for people. And they said, no, I don't like to show off. I don't want people to know. I said, no, but what happened is you can stimulate someone else's desire also to follow in your footsteps. And so it's not always an act of, you know, showing off or displaying your goodness or your kindness, but it also can help influence others who may have that in them but just didn't feel the need to, you know, start until somebody else does, you know. So that's what I came up with for the time being.
Okay.
That's really good.
Mordecai.
It's really, really good what Ryan said. You know, people are very interesting. I used to live in a mobile home park, and I used to work outside in my garden and did a lot of garden work, planted banana plants and all kinds of stuff. And whenever I went outside, people had done the same thing. You know, it was like a virus of acting. And then there was, you know, there's also something else too. You know, many times, you know, just like in our conversation today, you can kind of analyze how you're talking and how we are connecting into these subjects, and how sometimes we do not want to take the lead in anything. We just want sometimes to someone else start the good. For example, Don basically is at the center of this small universe that we have created here with us, you know, without any blasphemy or anything like that. You know, it's just kind of try to make it, you know, relaxed. But, you know, how we are trying to connect into anything, or we don't want to start it first. So with kindness, it's kind of it's the same thing, you know. To build a community, there's always someone who starts it. The reason of why many times is hidden, but it doesn't really matter. Many times, I've realized this while I was searching for friends and communities. I've realized that a lot of people are starting up something for a selfish reason. Let's say. Even kindness can be started from a selfish reason, but it does not mean that it would not start up something good. You know, for example, I don't want to point out anything that you know, serious or anything like that, but with this leadership, you know, a leadership of being kind, you know, be a leader of being kind, you build a community of kindness. So the act of tzedakah becomes doubles its value, but it can come back in a thousandfold. Let's say there's a good rabbi, a perfect rabbi, he's humorous, but he's also very knowledgeable, etc., etc., and he is reaching out for people a lot of times, you know, like the same way kind of like Don does. He's reaching out. So this rabbi, with his acts of kindness, of reaching out for other Jews or for other Noahides, either way, he will he will definitely create a great community. The reasons behind his kindness, it does not matter. The kindness itself, the act of kindness, is what really matters. So,
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just realized something. When Brother Dunn asked, why is the act of charity greater than sacrifice? And Hosea 6:6 just popped into my brain, because Hashem says so. He prefers us to supplicate and prayer rather than burnt offerings and sacrifices. There.
Yeah. There are many, many people out there that are different. You know, not everybody is the same. You know, so let's say some people has more good inclinations in them. Some people has less good inclination in them. There's a person who can reach the act of kindness through hardcore material things, but some people can achieve this act of kindness, this kind of tzedakah, by birth. At the point of their birth, my rabbi said something very interesting to me one day. I went and helped him out with something, and he told me, just out of the blue, you know, he said, the person who was born on Thursday is born on the day when God had created the fish and the birds, whom does not need too much. They can live on whatever seeds they can find, etc., etc. And that was a kind gesture from Hashem to us, for humans, to create these animals. So whoever was born on Thursdays possesses this gift. But some people do not possess the same gift. So it is so important what you said, Sarah, that we look into also the difference into the person's personality when we try to urge them to be charitable or, act as a kind person. That's it.
Nice. Dennis, would you like to chime in on this?
Well, like I said before, you can reach another person a lot better mentally than you can physically reach them. And if they think you're interested and caring and want to share something with them, they have a hard time rejecting that. So that's a human way to connect and to expand on different things. And we open up the good side of someone's mind when we reach those things that mean a lot to us.
Beautiful. Wow. Now, I want to, before we, Dennis, we go to the book, The Guide to the Perplexed, one more teaching, because I asked the question at the beginning of the show, is there more, is tzedakah, is it just charity or is it something more? Well, I'd like to give a proof from, again, this Talmudic teaching in Sukkah, which mentions the following statement. The Rebbe Lezer says, furthermore, quote, if a person does charity and justice, charity being tzedakah and justice being mishpat, for it says, if a person loves righteousness, now he's quoting from Psalms 33:5, if a person loves righteousness and justice, then the kindness of God fills the earth. I mean, that is like what I would consider to be one nice example, a beautiful and an eternal example of the butterfly effect, even before the scientists, the quantum physicists, the morphological, the students of morphology were even talking about it. See, King David was talking about, if a person loves righteousness and justice, and guess what's going to manifest into the creation? The kindness of God fills the earth. I mean, that's a pretty good equation. Do righteousness and justice, and, you know, that's like 1 + 1 = 2. One, righteous, loving righteousness plus justice equals the kindness of God fills the earth. Ron, what do you feel about that equation?
I just have to add with something else here. It says that there's one higher level of tzedakah, is being sensitive to someone before he's in trouble. And as the sages explain, it takes one person to support something before it falls. But after it falls, even five people may not be able to lift it. And one of the things there I noticed, the word that stuck out to me is sensitive, being sensitive. And to really be caring and truthfully to perform righteousness, a person has to really be sensitive to first himself and then to others. Because when you realize how certain things affect you and how you feel, then it changes your action, the way you react to people, the way you deal with them in general, because mm-hmm. of your enhanced sensitivity. And it also makes your acts of kindness and even your righteous acts more sincere, because it's coming from the inner you instead of just the external you, just responding in a general fashion.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Dennis, just one more time before we go to the God to Perplex, I just want to mention that Mordechai mentioned he wasn't, if I understood you correctly, I heard you correctly, you weren't so concerned what my reason is for doing this. I want to say that I'm trying to live my life according to what it says in Psalms 33:5, and also there's a Midrash, which is brought down in the 36th chapter of the seminal work called Tanya by the Alter Rebbe Rav Shneur Zalman of Leyadi, that the Most High desires a dwelling place down here in the lower worlds, meaning this world. Now you might say, well, again, you know, he has it. I mean, doesn't his glory fill the earth? Where is there a place you can say there is not to be found the Most High? However, again, the purpose of human beings, as we understand going back from Genesis, when Adam and Chava, original man and woman, were placed in Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, is that we should work the earth to elevate it, not destroy it, and we should elevate others in the process of elevating this experience, that we as limited finite beings, every one of us, almost 7 billion people in the world, possesses divine images, that we can access freely our divine image while making this place in a pleasant and peaceful manner in fulfillment of what it says in the prophecy of Isaiah 45:18, the Most High didn't make this world for chaos, but he actually meant it to be a settled place where we as the human family can get together and enjoy in the ultimate delight of all delights, to praise him and give thanks to him and be in fellowship with all human beings and all the other creatures of this earth. We're supposed to be in fellowship as well with the animals. That's the spirit of the Torah. That's why we should avoid doing acts of cruelty to animals. So that being said, Dennis, could you please read from us, you emailed me earlier in the week about Rabbi Maimonides' take on charity. If you could read it slow, and then we can, you know, we can all digest it and all chime in with some feedback. If you can take it away, Dennis.
Okay. You got to remember that the source here was written in the 13th and 14th century, and it's called The Guide to Perplexed, and I'm addressing chapter 39. The Rambam mm-hmm. titled this chapter, The Laws Relating to Charity. He states from the section Zeririm, we learn precepts. The first one is, have sympathy with the poor and infirm. Assist the needy in various ways, not to hurt the feelings of those who are in want, not to vex those who are in hapless condition, such as widows and orphans. He also continues with the purpose of the law concerning portions, which are to be given to the poor, is likewise obvious. The reason of the laws concerning the heave offerings and the tithe is distinctly stated in Deuteronomy 14:29. He mentioned that the first tithe went to the Levite since he had no property, while a second tithe was commanded to be spent on food in Jerusalem. In this way, the owner was compelled to give part of it away as charity, as he was not able to use it otherwise than by any other way other than eating and drinking. He must have been easily induced to give it gradually away. The Rambam states, this rule brought multitudes together in one place and strengthened the bond of love and brotherhood among the children of men. The Rambam sums the concept of portioning and tithing with, for the first of everything is to be devoted to the Lord. By doing so, man accustoms himself to be liberal and to limit his appetite for eating and desire for property. The Rambam goes one step further regarding the first of everything, since it teaches that man is essentially in the service of God to remember the times of trouble and the history of past distress and the days of comfort. The Rambam continued with the law, lays stress on the duty in several places, and he mentions that in Deuteronomy 5-15. For it is to be feared for those who become great in riches and comfort, as is generally the case, fall into the vices of insolence and haughtiness and abandon all good principles. The Rambam also mentions other precepts of this class, such as kindness to servants and to the poor, by renouncing all claims to debts in the year of the release, and relieving the slaves of their bondage in the seventh year. He further states that all precepts comprised in laws on evaluations, and that's in, he quoted that, and on things devoted, which again he quotes, are based on the principle of charity. For it is in the nature of man to strive to gain money and to increase it, and his great desire to add to his wealth and honor is the chief source of misery for man. At this point, the Rambam exhorts us to practice mercy wherever we can. There are examples that he quotes from Exodus 21 through 26 and Deuteronomy 23, 15 to 16. And with the exception of sinners and evildoers seeking our help, which is also reflected in Exodus 12 to 14 and Deuteronomy 4 to 8.
Beautiful. And first of all, I'd like to thank you for reading 30. It nice and slow. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That ends chapter 39.
Beautiful. First of all, I'd like to thank you for delivering in a nice, clear, and crisp fashion. And that was a lot to chew. I don't even remember everything you said, but I would first like to get everyone's initial reaction. Captain Sarah, your reaction to this teaching of Rambam of the duty of human beings to engage in acts of charity and consideration not to hurt the feelings of the poor and the destitute.
Well, I am trying to look up the verse of Deuteronomy chapter 4 with no success, but when I was listening to that, I was thinking initially the act of kindness and charity, how they can go hand in hand, and that is the first and foremost thing. When he was reading about some of those things, he was reading the Guide to the Perplexed, which I've never read before, and I think it's fascinating. The 13th century, a lot of things were going through my mind, but most that stuck out was the act of kindness and charity is greater than the sacrifice that you do, although it feeds you and people. That's just it's just fulfilling the need of eating something. But the rest, it moves you to do better, to elevate the world to a better state, to heal it, to repair, and it's a domino effect. Everyone would see, through your act of that kindness and charity and others, it's like we're working together as a family to clean up our masses, to not destroy our the land that, like your grandmother Dunn was saying, that we're just renting this land. So if we're renting it, the landlord is Hashem, and we should have a little kind of fears like, oh, I better take care of this because, it's going to come back and say, what did you do with my earth? Oh, you took all the oil out of it. Oh, no, this is no good. It's going to be no good anymore, Where are you going to live, So we should be thinking like that, and then we'll do more acts of kindness and education about, how can I do my share and my part, and we can all work together and learn from each other and just work towards that better world. I learned something. Tikkun Olam is like the healing and repair of the earth, and that works
right
together with the charity and acts of kindness, and then also the health and welfare of the planet and our, of our own souls as well. So I think that's the great, the greatest thing. I seen a video of the Lubavitch Rebbe once, and I was really moved by it. And he was giving the people a charity that he was giving to people, the dollar bills. And he said to, it was a big, really big thing, and I never seen that before, that a leader would give the money to the people. It's usually the other way around. People give the money to, you know, right? I was like, wow, that's very, he was very humbled. And I felt, I cried. I was like, oh, wow. It humbled me. If he could do that, well, what, you know, I feel ashamed. Like, what am I doing, you know?
But the Rebbe did that. I just want to chime in that he did it in his mid-80s to almost the age of 90, and he would stand for hours and hours. It would be on Sundays or during the week, special occasion, and he was trying to exemplify as a living example how a person just, you know, if it takes that a person just stand in one place and give in order to educate people, others to give, then so be it. That was the call of duty that he felt he should accept upon himself. And to this day, there are many people, myself being one of them, and my wife, because we stood on line many times. We have a whole collection of those dollars. But it wasn't that we just took the dollar. It was on the condition that we take another dollar, and how much more we would receive blessings. If we gave more than the $1, so to speak, on the condition of getting that dollar from Rebbe, we would give $1, $2, $3, $5, $6, $7. I don't know if I ever gave him more, maybe $10 once, in exchange for that. So it was like an investment. He was investing his time and energy that we should invest more of our time and energy in giving more tzedakah, more charity, doing more goodness in the world. Ron, would you like to chime in?
This is basically in addition to what Dennis mentioned earlier, that the Rambam has published the 8 levels of giving of charity, of practice, not giving of charity, practicing of tzedakah, which is righteousness. And, I mean, anyone can go online and they can find it. It's the Laws of Charity by the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah series, chapter 10, 7 through 14. I was going through that, and it started from the highest level, which means basically supporting someone before they're in need of charity, in terms of helping someone with a loan, finding them a job, or at least even helping them to acquire the education they need to be able to have a job, so they would not need to acquire charity for, you know, basic living. And he goes on to, you know, all the lesser levels after that. So I would advise everyone, if you know, once you have a PC, you can just punch in the 8 levels of charity by the Rambam, and he would see all those levels there. So it's very, very interesting.
You just Google the 8 levels of charity by Rambam, or was there a specific website?
Okay, you can use Chabad.org and put the 8 levels of charity there, and you will get the Rambam.
Let me just spell it out.
The levels of the charity there, yes.
Let me, because some people with the Chabad, they might not start phonetically in English. That would be www.chabad.org. That's www.chabad.org. Mordechai, what are your feelings on this matter that we're talking about, according to my mind to teach you?
Yes, I liked it. And the reason, you know, since you mentioned, if you understand it correctly or not, I know your reasons. Your reasons are out of pure giving and charity and acts of kindness, so don't worry about it, man. I was thinking about, you know, some religious organizations, you know, that are starting out of a different reason. So anyways, about the Rambam, I read a lot of books about spirituality in many in my search, and I bring in one book. This was a Hungarian person, very, very famous philosopher, And he wrote a book one time about how a human being is developing. And it's very interesting because I can see this many, many times in everyday life. In our youth, we are chasing after that dollar, you know. We are chasing after that money. We are like, you know, nobody can take that stuff away from us, our strength and all that. And as we get older, you know, we start to think. We're not only chasing the money, but we start to think, hey, how can I make this easier? You know, how can I not to work so much so I can put my energy into something else? So we figured it out in our 40s or 50s how to do this. And what happens is we got that time that we desired. So in that time, we start to question life. We start to question our whole existence. And as we get older and there's no more work, we find out that, I know what I was missing. I was missing spirituality. I was missing that part of my life in this whole wild goose chase after money, after power, after whatever. And here I am. Now I have all of this, but I don't have that. So in this philosopher, I just want to mention, you know, put it in. His name is Béla Hamvas. He's a Hungarian guy. And in his philosophy, the person that is powerful, has a huge family, has an empire and all that stuff, he finally gives everything away as charity. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes somebody who searches for Hashem. Now, and it's very interesting because it did happen with this person. And in the communism after the Second World War, they took his titles away. They tore him out of a library where he did work, and he was a teacher and all that stuff, and they put him into physical labor. So he had to show the world that his philosophy, he can live up to his philosophy, and he did live up until the end of his life. So to join back to the Rambam, you know, basically when a rich man gives away his possessions to the poor, it is on many levels. It's not only the giving away the money, it is the act itself. The act, it's very powerful. Within the act, there's so much energy compressed together that when the act releases itself, the energy of Hashem's kindness, Hashem's suggestion of giving kindness and charity to others, this energy with the action itself will spread and will multiply within the power structure of those that are receiving this charity. And
awesome.
they cannot really say, okay, now I've got this money and I'm just going to blow it all away. This energy will multiply within themselves and they will, you know, give. But also, a rich man can give charity by giving work. Ron said it. As Ron said it, you know, before the person needs the charity. So it's very, very complex, but that's why it's so beautiful. Okay, I'm done.
John, can I say something?
Yeah, sure.
Can I chime in? When the brother was reading the Guide to the Perplexed, at the end he quoted the Rambam saying the Deuteronomy chapter 4, and when Brother Mordecai was talking about, it came to me about, you know, when he was talking about how you can forget, and then I'm reading this Deuteronomy chapter 4, and the verse 9, it says here, to be careful and watch yourselves closely, so you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them fade from your heart, as long as you live. And this is the part that stood out to me when Mordecai was saying what he was saying. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. And at the beginning of this chapter of Deuteronomy, it's, you know, when you said it in the show that charity begins at home, that's how that this would apply. You're supposed to teach this. So it's a two or threefold. situation, your act of charity and kindness is going to benefit the person you're giving it to, and it elevates you as well, the human being. It humbles you. And also the children are learning it just from the example, and it makes an impression, because children, that's why we're supposed to teach from infancy up, because they're like sponge. Whatever you teach them, it will impress on their hearts. Even when they're older, if they try to walk away from it, somehow they'll remember. It's been imprinted already.
Mm-hmm. I can still remember. I mean, not really the charity, but in the sense it was an act of charity. Like my grandparents, both of my grandfathers, rest in peace, said that both of them, I remember, they always greeted the grandchildren with a cheery countenance. And one would say, oh, don't we make us a great team? And the other one would give me a little squeeze on the cheek and then a kiss and everything. And then, grandpas give money to the children. But the point is that we were greeted with a cheery countenance. Now, how much greater so it will be that we who are, all of us are, none of us are 22 years old anymore, but when we greet younger people on the street or wherever we go, and with an opportunity to dialogue as we are now, so to speak, like a little slice of what we're talking about here with about 13 minutes to go, with a cheery countenance to encourage them. Because, I last Sunday, I couldn't do the show. I was supposed to even give a live class in Crown Heights, and I had to attend a funeral. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that I was so impressed, because it was a eulogies uttered for the first Orthodox doctor in Forest Hill section of Queens, New York. And the beauty of it was that the way this man was described was, it didn't matter who you were, Dr. Feinberg respected you. And Dr. Feinberg would help people sometimes without charging them. And Dr. Feinberg, this is the point that I really love, he made house calls. Now, all of us, I mean, I'm old enough to remember, kind of stopped by the time I was like probably 10 years old in the early 70s, when doctors started making house calls. But maybe Dennis, you remember doctors when they made house calls. Maybe maybe up in Canada where the medicine is a little more, I would, in certain aspects, more merciful than, say, over here, the social forms of medicine around. Maybe you remember down in Guyana. Or Mordechai, maybe you remember in Hungary when you were growing up. That to hear in 2010, three generations of patients who were treated by this Dr. Feinberg, may rest in peace, and it should be over 500 people heard, oh, guess what? Doctors used to make house calls. This isn't something you heard about in a storybook or saw in a movie, some sort of movie, but you actually heard in the real life of a human being who they were coming to celebrate and mourn simultaneously the passing of a great man and a very humble man, as I met him once, that house calls were part of this, this treatment process. And I thought to myself, wow, how great it would be if neighbors would make house calls to other neighbors more often just to say how they're doing, plus less phone calls would have to be made to make appointments to doctor's offices. Anyone like to chime in on this?
Well, I'd like to chime in on what Mordechai said a minute ago.
Okay.
Yes, Mordechai, as we get older, we gain wisdom, and we start questioning what is life. However, since most of us are in a race, or a chase to make money or do better, we sometimes have to reflect on what are we really in the race for and what is the prize at the end. Because we have to be serious and try to understand, are we chasing something imaginary or are we chasing our tails? Each person
mm-hmm.
has to decide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but I read a really interesting quote is a truly free man is the free man who makes his own choices. So you choose, can you choose the right thing? As you get to that point that I choose this, you will never be able to prove what you're chasing, but you know that this is what makes most people, this is an act of kindness. Even your decision, your choice of saying, I believe in the thing that I've been chasing. And with that act of kindness, of your own belief, with your own strong structure of not, yes, you can question. Of course, we can all question, or, you know, it is true or it is not. But this choice makes you the freedom to give the kindness to those that are in peril, that have problems. You know, the youth nowadays have a lot of problems, and there are a lot of people that John is working with, a lot of Rasta guys that had drug problems, alcohol problems, etc. For those people, it does not matter. What matters is your act of kindness, of your own belief, of your own strength, of pulling them out of that filth, you know. So it's so connected, you know. That's what I can say, you know.
Well spoken, Mordecai.
Well, Ron, would you like to chime in on the whole idea of growing up in Guyana? Let me ask you this. Was there a great sense of difference between the economic classes, between the middle class, the poor, and the well-to-do?
Let me see. Back home, it was basically two classes. It was the real wealthy people, and the middle and the lower, there weren't really much of a difference between them. But what I can say for the medical profession, back home, it was more people who wanted to help others became doctors. It wasn't the profession didn't bring with it wealth and honor. It brought with it love from fellow men. Because when a person brought a child into to a doctor, they didn't think that first I have to worry if my insurance will cover it or not, or if his doctor will look at me and says your insurance doesn't cover it and just walk away. Their first and foremost goal is to make sure that that child is helped as much as possible, or that, you know, elder person, whoever it was who came to visit the doctor. And over here, I just noticed that difference, and it's very cold, and it's more about the prestige of being a doctor and the money that you acquire. And if only doctors can realize that their job, basically, they're basically the hand of God. Because just like when a person will pray to God to help cure them or to heal them, when you go to a doctor, you're expecting that healing or that cure comes from God through him. He's the conduit. And unfortunately, doctors don't realize this. And I think that's one of the big parts of, you know, tested kindness in this country. Because people have God-given jobs that basically... We are basically assisting God in this world and making this world a dwelling place and to being good to our fellow man, and they're just using it for personal gain instead. And whenever we give to God a helping hand, even a smile, we have to remember that we have no idea what that other person is going through, what they're feeling, and maybe they just prayed and asked God for help the second before they extend their hand to us. And when we give them whatever it is, a coin, a dollar, a plate of food, whatever it is, we are actually being the hand of God in that person's eyes.
Right. Now, friends, what is a concern to me, especially in a time where, you know, I don't think we're still out of the rough of this economic downturn. Hopefully it'll be an upturn immediately, that, you know, there's a lot of name-calling, and unfortunately, I heard it from a working-class perspective, and I heard it when I was growing up in a more middle-class environment. I've never really lived in the upper middle class, that don't matter. And it never stopped me from embracing the Torah lifestyle, which I hope to embrace into eternity. But I always was troubled by this old idea of picking out the poor and the helpless, the widow, the orphan, as if they're the source of the draining of the funds of society, where the Rambam seems to be saying just the opposite, that, you know, we need to help them. Now, connected to that, there was a teaching by the Lubavitcher Rebbe where he kind of blew up this axiom that poverty is connected to violence. Therefore, poor people, you can assume them to be more violent. But he said, no, it's not true, because we saw proof. And this was a teaching that was given over in 1981 after, I think his name was John Hinckley. He tried to assassinate President Reagan, and he mentioned that this Mr. Hinckley
he actually came from a well-to-do family, and his problem was he was never given any borders. And because he was never any borders, and he grew up, quote-unquote, kind of like spoiled, therefore he thought he had the right to try to actually commit murder, which, of course, you know, is against not only the spirit of the Ten Commandments, but also the spirit against the spirit of the Noah Commandments. Well, there are 4 minutes left. And by the way, one more thing. You also mentioned that if you take a person who is poor and educate them, they will actually become, you know, fiery and desire to become more educated, and they will actually become positive contributors to society. So 4 minutes left, friend. Anyone like to chime in on, you know, maybe they see an example of a person who came from not the best of circumstances and elevated themselves to the point where they're actually helping other people. Anyone like to chime in on that? Or
well,
just comment in general about this concept?
Giving is a result of personal satisfaction. The giver feels it and the receiver feels it. If these feelings evoke other things and eventually lead to well-being to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, sir, do you know of any cases? I'm sure you do. You just have to conjure it up in your mind, of people who maybe didn't get the best breaks in life and were sisters somehow and became, you know, living examples for other people.
Like successfully? You mean like?
Not say financially, but they are so to speak what we would call quote unquote productive members of society, positive contributors to society, but they didn't necessarily get all the breaks. But someone helped them along the way.
To mine, I can only think of my family. They're always helping, and you know, when no one has something, someone else has it, and they give it to them, and then they all are successful. They all had a break, and they continue the act of kindness. Here's an example in my town. It's not final, but there's someone who is in trouble that can't stay in business for some reason, and they've closed their doors. So I'm trying to connect with this person, and I wanted to offer my help because it's a family. There's trouble in the family. It's been 2 weeks they haven't opened their store. It's a flower shop. It's a young family, and she took over this business 2 years ago. So I know the flower shop business since I was 13. My parents own flower shops, and I am moved to want to help this girl, and I'm trying to connect with her, and I wanted to just to buy her some time. I wanted to volunteer my time to help get her feet back on the road, and see what I could do over the season here, this holiday season coming up, and if I can do something, that's what I'm offering. So maybe
beautiful.
I can help her. So,
well, hopefully in the future show, you can report to us good news about your efforts, and may the Most High bless you to arouse within her the latent potential to overcome the difficult circumstances, which, by the way, will arouse within you latent powers of your soul and your intellect and your heartful feelings to help another human being, to help them bring, you know, to make a comeback, to make the business even stronger than it ever was. Friends, we've got about less than a minute to go. I want to thank everyone for chiming in. We were very eclectic, but I think hopefully in the future we're going to continue on this subject matter, because I do want to talk about more about this idea about how, you know, there is this depiction of the poor as being the source of draining valuable funds from society. I mean, right here in New York City now, the mayor is proposing to cut $360 million from the educational budget, which is really taking a knife and putting it to the neck of the children of New York City. I want to do a little more studying about that. I do want to thank, again, Catherine Saramana and Ron Williams and Dennis Ryan and Mordechai Ben Sara. This is Dundas Hill Goodman from Soul Class number 31, Tzedakah. Is it just charity or is it something more? Remember, first of all, let's just remember what it says in chapter 33, verse 5. When we do a kindness, We do kindness and justice because the Most High's kindness to flood the earth. Let's flood the earth with kindness speedily in our days. Have a great day, everyone.
Amen.
Shalom.
Amen.
Shalom.
Thank you, everyone.